This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Megan Duggan is inarguably one of the best hockey players in the world. The former Wisconsin Badger was the captain of the Olympic champion team in 2018. During her career, she's earned one gold and two silver medals at the Olympics. And as a member of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team, she's won seven world championships. Last week, she announced her retirement from playing hockey. But that doesn't mean she stopped working to better the sport, especially when it comes to gender equity. In 2017, Duggan and the other members of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team threatened to boycott the World Championship unless USA Hockey agreed to give them greater support. At the time, players were earning less than half of the federal poverty level wage per year. USA Hockey agreed to greater support, but Duggan says that female hockey players still have a long way to go before there's real gender parity in the sport. Duggan will be talking about her work toward gender equity as the keynote speaker of the Game Changers virtual event presented by the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee. She joins me now to talk about her work. Megan, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, you recently announced your decision to retire, which seems crazy because you're so young, and yet you've also had such a storied career in so many ways. What led you to this decision?
This decision for me, as with many of the decisions I've made in my life as a person or throughout my career as a hockey player, was really just all about gut and kind of letting my heart and my mind and my soul dictate what felt right. And I've been fortunate to have such a fantastic, wonderful career surrounded by amazing teammates and friends and just incredible opportunities and experiences. And this is just the right next step for myself and my family.
Yeah. This event in Milwaukee is, of course, about game changers. And, you know, I feel like that's been a major part of your career. Something that people might not know, listeners might not know, who may not be familiar with U.S. women's hockey is, of course, you all went on strike. For listeners who may not be familiar with that situation, this was a few years back. Can you describe the conditions that led to this historic strike?
Of course, yeah. I had been a part of the national team at that point for, you know, around 10 years. And when you first get on the national team, it had been my goal and my dream since I was a little kid. And my first experience, you know, I was young on the team and kept my head down and worked hard, kept my mouth shut and just took it all in. And as myself and some of my teammates kind of matured through our careers and had more experiences and developed into leadership roles, we started to have conversations just about some of the changes that we thought we could make in our program, you know, directly in our program and for just girls and women's hockey in our country. So we started talking about things, you know, obviously there was a support and a compensation area that we wanted to make changes in, but also just, you know, marketing and PR. And something important to us was we want young girls that are aspiring to play hockey to be able to see us. So increased marketing and promotion was certainly something that was important. And also programming, you know, we wanted to play more. We wanted more games. We wanted to be out there. We wanted to work more. So those were kind of the three areas that we, you know, or buckets that we worked towards improving. We had a lot of discussions with our national governing body, and we weren't able to make the meaningful progress that we wanted to make. And that led us to where we didn't want to end up, but eventually having to threaten to boycott a world championship.
You know, for context here, you're inarguably one of the best hockey players in the world, but we don't think of women's hockey in the same way that we think of, you know, the men's league, the NHL. What does the career of an elite women's hockey player look like when you compare it to a man's?
At this point, you know, it's not a pretty picture to compare a professional women's hockey player with a professional men's hockey player. I think that's a lot of what the women in our program and a lot of other women that are playing at an elite level in the United States and in Canada are fighting for right now. And, you know, my dream is that someday my, you know, future daughter or her daughter or other young girls can make a living playing professional women's ice hockey. And we're not there right now. There's a lot of people working in a lot of different ways to move the needle and to get us closer to that point, but we're not there right now. But we will be there someday, and it'll be kudos to a lot of hardworking women in the space.
You know, one of the things that struck me as I was going through some of the disputes that led to this strike was the complete lack of a living wage, to be very frank. I'm not even sure that you'd call it a poverty wage because it's just so far below the poverty line. It looked like essentially USA Hockey was paying about $5,000 a year, $20,000 over a four-year period. Is that accurate?
It's been so long since I've looked at all the numbers, but yeah, I mean, we've come a long way in that sense. But prior to 2017, yes, there was virtually $0 wage at that point.
And context for listeners, U.S. women's hockey is one of the most winningest teams in the world. Of course, you yourself have gone three times to the Olympics, collected one gold medal, two silvers. You've gone eight times to the World Championship, winning seven gold medals, one silver. With that context in mind, would you say the U.S. women's hockey team is also among the best treated in the world? Or is there some disparity there when you look at other countries that might not be quite at the level of U.S. women's hockey?
Yeah, I mean, as you just mentioned, our team has definitely had a lot of success on the world stage and on the ice competing as athletes. And, you know, we've worked hard, certainly, for that success. And there are a lot of women, you know, in our program and out of our program, as I mentioned, that are working hard to move the needle in other aspects. And in regards to some other countries, I think when we stood up in 2017 and wanted to push our sport forward in the United States and get women, you know, more equitably treated for the men, I think we served as what I hope is kind of an ignition and role models for some of those other countries. I know, you know, in other sports even, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the last few years of women's professional athletes kind of standing up and having discussions with their governing bodies in all sorts of different sports in different countries. And that's something that, you know, I'm very proud of our team for being on the forefront of starting those discussions and being role models for other women that want to do the same.
Yeah. Now, when you look back at your career, for you, what are the most memorable moments?
Oh, man, that's such a great question. And it's been so fun and emotional and energizing these last couple days to reflect on a lot of those moments and the role that hockey has played in my life. You know, I put on skates for the first time 30 years ago when I was 3 years old and grew up through the sport. I mean, I built my life around my goals and dreams, and I think when I'm reflecting upon all of that, what I'm most thankful for or what sticks out most to me is the people in my life. And I mentioned it earlier in the call, but my teammates and, you know, my family that's kind of evolved through this dream with me, and coaches and support staff and trainers and, you know, different organizations I've been a part of. And, you know, not to mention young girls and boys that play hockey and young fans across the country that I've had the opportunity to meet and interact with. Those are the things that stick out to me, experiences I've had meeting other people, learning from other people, and just growing as a person through those relationships. And that's, you know, I would say the pillar of everything that hockey has given me is those relationships and experiences with other people.
You know, as we're talking about relationships, I have to ask you this, and I'm sure you're asked this all the time. Your wife was a member of the Canadian national team. You actually played against her in two Olympics. And when I heard that, I thought, it's basically like a Packers player marrying a player for the Bears. What is that relationship like? I have to know.
No, it's a great question and obviously a fair one. And I think, you know, first of all, again, reflecting on my career, I think how wonderful I met my wife through hockey. So when I talk about what hockey means to me, you know, it created my family. I met my wife. We have our, you know, our son that we had in February. And so how wonderful and how special the role that hockey has played in that. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly a unique situation, obviously, but it's one that that works for us, and you know, that I'm really thankful for. I think the best part is that when we were playing, say, against each other, or you know, training or something like that, we both certainly understand the demands and what it takes, and you know, can help each other out in that aspect. So I think just overall, love trumps all, you know, country, sports, whatever. You know, we can certainly be competitive, but to me, in all aspects of life, love trumps all. And that's, you know, that's been at the core of our relationship for sure.
Nice. As you look back at your career, I have to imagine that winning that Olympic gold medal was a real highlight. What was that experience like for you?
When I think about that moment, I was talking with a friend last night about, you know, if you could relive one moment, and the pure euphoric joy of winning an Olympic gold medal after going after it for so long and having it be a childhood dream for over 20 years. I mean, that's aside from getting married and the birth of my son, that is like the ultimate highest of high. I mean, it was the culmination of all. I would love to just relive that moment just to feel, like I said, that just euphoric joy that you feel in that moment. There's very few times in my life, and I've had some wonderful experiences, but that I felt that amount of just pure joy in my heart. And to celebrate with my teammates and my family on the ice after is just very special, and definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah. Now, as you're looking to your post-hockey playing life, what are you looking forward to, and what do you hope to do?
Well, I think some of the best advice I was just given recently, actually, in the last couple days from, you know, some mentors in the hockey space, and Cammy Granato and Cassie Campbell both had similar messages to me in saying, you know, don't feel like you need to rush or jump into something right away. You've earned a little bit of space, and, you know, the hockey grind and the Olympic grind is tough. So making sure that I can kind of reflect on things and move forward when I'm ready. And I think that's wonderful advice. And obviously idolize and respect those two immensely. And they've been through the transition themselves. So that's one thing I'm going to keep in mind. But, you know, I'm certainly looking forward to being a new mom and all the adventures and challenges that come with that, and raising my son, putting him in positions to thrive. That's, you know, at the top of the list for me. And then I'm looking forward to continuing to have an immense impact in hockey and whatever that looks like. You know, I've always been 2 feet in trying to continue to help grow the sport, to inspire another, you know, generation of female athletes, to be an ambassador. And those are all things that are really important to me. So I'll definitely look to continue to do those.
I heard a rumor that you might be interested in coaching an NHL team. Is that something that you'd want to do?
I mean, it's always been a dream of mine to be actually, you know, the first female general manager of an NHL team. I love coaching as well. It's, you know, I think continuing to set lofty goals for myself is something I will always do. I think to get to that point, I have a lot to learn and a lot to soak in, and, you know, many people to, you know, be a sponge to and just learn from and look to and ask questions. And I feel that's the spot that I'm in my life right now. That would be an incredible goal to accomplish. But there's a lot of work, would be a lot of work to get there. So I'm looking forward to, like I said, just learning, taking a lot in, you know, soaking in advice from a lot of people that have done transitioned from player to the other side of the glass, and we'll go from there.
Megan Duggan is a retired ice hockey forward, the former captain of the U.S. women's Olympic team, and she was a member of the U.S. women's national hockey team. She's also the keynote speaker of the Game Changers virtual event presented by the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee, which is happening today at 3. The event is meant to highlight the challenges that many women face due to systemic issues and the different ways we can change the game itself to create a more equitable society. Lisa Attenito is the executive director of the Women's Fund, and she joins me now to talk about some of the issues facing women in light of the pandemic. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's delightful.
This has been a particularly difficult year for women's equity. We're looking at a huge increase in unemployment, specifically among married women, which points to, I think, the continuing gender equity issues that are systemic in our culture. Can you talk us through this a bit? What are some of the issues that we've really seen exacerbated by the conditions that we're currently living in?
That is a really good way to start this conversation, because the issues that face the community at large, or the country really, are all related to systemic issues. And they have been prevalent for decades and generations and even centuries, but they are now more understandable by more people. Systems are hard for people to understand, but certainly the pandemic has showed us that many systems, healthcare systems, educational systems, the economic system, but even more than that, our personal well-being are so interconnected and so in need of revamping. You know, we need to think about how we want healthcare to be provided to our community and to our people. We traditionally get healthcare through employment. When employment is disrupted, therefore healthcare is disrupted for the individual. But then also even just how the systems of healthcare work, how they're funded or make money, earn profits, how individuals and workers are hired, paid, and trained. All are systems that at this time need to be reevaluated. And certainly the pandemic has showed us that essential workers range and can ebb and flow depending on the scenario, and that we need to pay attention to everyone in our community. We have more women in the workplace today than ever before in history. And so you would think we would have figured out the social structures that provide for women to have these positions in the working world, but we never really figured that out. We haven't figured out daycare or after school care. We haven't figured out how to take care of our homes when two people are working full time. How do we take care of even just home repair, but in the weekly home jobs? So these are things that this pandemic and the scenarios that we're facing in 2020 are forcing us to reconsider, to say, well, what does it mean to work, and who is working, and what is their compensation? And how do we create a better balance so that everyone can live their full potential and thrive?
Well, it seems like that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks, especially when we come to married women who have had such losses during this pandemic, many of whom attribute it to the fact that a lot of kids are having to stay home from school and someone needs to teach them. And many couples have decided, well, the man's job pays more, the woman's job pays less. And so they make this often rational decision that has this huge disparate impact on women. When we think about this from the perspective of, you know, the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee, what are some of the things that you're prioritizing that speak to a more equitable workplace and world for women? What are some of the things that need to happen to make this change?
Yeah, so that's a really loaded question. I mean, there's so much that has to change. It's difficult to answer that quickly and efficiently. So my reaction is one with a great big smile that says, oh, can we talk about this? Let's talk about this. What needs to change? And for the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee, we are so focused on systems change, really getting to the core of the issue to make the advancement. And while we don't do the work directly, because we often work with our grant partners or providing scholarships to women who are pursuing higher education, changing attitudes and behavior is a key part of making any kind of change. And so we also spend quite a bit of time having conversations and discussions, creating new ideas and maybe new perspectives for people so that they can go out and create the ripple effect of that conversation into their own lives and into the broader community. Directly to your question, what needs to happen, what needs to change? There are so many things, but I think there are a couple that are really high priorities. But we have to, as a community and a culture, a society, we have to think about women's personal safety as a key part of women thriving and really becoming her full person. That's important. She has to have safety both in the home and out in the world, which of course requires respect and love and care and compassion, etc. We also feel like she has to have access to education. She has to have the opportunity to make her own decisions in every aspect of her life, where she lives, what she does, what medical needs she has, that she has full control over every aspect of her life, as do so many men and others. I think also it's important that women have a seat at every table, in every room, all the time. You mentioned the pay inequities. I mean, that is a huge barrier for women. That's why they've made the decisions. As you well pointed out, you know, they didn't have any other choice. When it comes right down to it, money matters. And the family is always going to make the choice to create the financial independence that they need through money. And so it's not surprising to see so many women stepping out of the workplace now to take care of the family, the children, the schooling, etc.
Yeah. Now, your upcoming event is, of course, about game changers. When you use that term, what do you mean?
Yeah, so the event committee started meeting early in 2020 and really wanted to create a conversation around how does one make change? If you're one person and you're in a scenario where the norm is so set and so established, how do you make change? And we learned of Megan Duggan's story and thought it might be a great uplifting conversation to have in the year of so much uncertainty and so much concern about making change to systems. And so we think of a game changer as one that creates a vision, builds unity, and then goes on a journey. And I think Megan is a perfect example of exactly how a game changer does that.
Lisa Attenito is the executive director of the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee, which is holding its Game Changers virtual event today at 3:00. I spoke with the keynote speaker, hockey star Megan Duggan, earlier in the show.